Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today it's Q&A with Layla, and this is the second part of today's broadcast. So welcome back, Layla.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman.
So what do we got?
Okay, we've got a question from Linda. Linda has coronary artery disease. She has two stents. She also has Hashimoto's.
By the way, not an uncommon combination, because Hashimoto's is hypothyroidism, will cause weight gain, lethargy, high cholesterol, and is associated with cardiovascular risk.
Yeah. Now, her cardiologist has diagnosed her with PCSK9, a polymorphism that controls the amount of receptors which carry the LDL out or doesn't. She's got the glitch that
And that's got to be done via genetic testing or saliva testing.
Yes.
We actually talked about that last week on one of our Intelligent Medicine podcasts with Dr. Nova, who heads a genetic testing lab, Pathway Genomics. And it's a very interesting new field, is that we'll actually be able to the new tests will not be blood tests anymore. They'll be saliva tests, or, you know, maybe take a cheek swab to see what your genetic potential is. Anyway, go ahead.
Her cardiologist wants her on a low or no-fat diet because he wants to get her LDL particles down to 800 from 1,200.
So here it is. Here's this brilliant test, and this very wonky physician who's using this most cutting-edge test. And then on the lifestyle end, he's making the wrong recommendation.
So it's like
you have the most brilliant, electron microscope, and you zero in on the inner workings of the cell. And then you say, there's fat in your arteries, so let's stop eating fat, and you won't have any fat in your arteries, which is like, it's like pre-Galileo physics, astronomy. It's like the stars revolve around the Earth.
Right. Her cardiologist wants her to start taking niacin.
And that's a bad idea, too, because and I'm all for supplements, but I got to say that niacin has not been proven to be helpful for patients with cardiovascular disease. It lowers cholesterol beautifully, but there are things that lower cholesterol that do not lower the risk for cardiovascular disease. That's why people with cholesterol of 130 sometimes get heart attacks.
Yeah.
It's not just about cholesterol.
Right, and she's read The Great Cholesterol Myth by Dr. Steven Sinatra.
Right.
And Johnny Bowden. Anyway, she's on all the best supplements because a colleague of mine who's a functional medicine RD, Kristen, she's in her care and she's taking all the right things
good.
That we would recommend.
Good, and I trust Kristen because, Kristen's on the ball with her recommendations.
Yeah. So what do you think of this PCSK9 thing? I mean, how much control? Is that something that gets turned on or off?
I'd have to do a little research on that. And I will confess that this is something new that I'm relatively unfamiliar with. It's one of the genes that is responsible for abnormal lipids. This is a very complex equation because there may be dozens of genes involved, some of which we've discovered, some of which we have not, some of which have, a very high influence on cardiovascular risk, and some which may potentiate risk, but if combined with the right kind of lifestyle, do not create a risk. So, for example, there's some people who have a so-called thrifty gene for diabetes, probably a combination, a multiplicity of genes involved there. We're now testing for them at the Hoffman Center, by the way. But you can escape your fate by exercising at a high level and eating a really nice low-carb diet. And
exactly.
In fact,
and here's another clue. She's gotten her hemoglobin A1C down to a 5.8, which is still too high.
So suggesting that she has her problems around the sugar area, not excessive fat consumption.
Yeah. So going low-fat on the advice of her cardiologist is a terrible idea.
Right.
She needs to be low-carb, higher in the right kinds of fats, moderate protein, and that could bring that A1C down.
I bet he's a very skinny vegetarian cardiologist who jogs a lot.
probably.
Which is better than a fat, sedentary cardiologist who eats a lot of junk food.
Yeah.
But it's still not applying the right finesse and refinement to her problem.
Boy, I remember my grandfather's doctor, he would make house calls.
Yeah.
My grandfather died of emphysema back in the 80s after smoking all of his life. But the doctor came over and they'd smoke.
That's great. That's one of the advantages of a house call, because you can't smoke in the doctor's office, but if you visit a patient's home, in the sanctity of their home,
I am witness to that. I was a teenager at the time. I'm going, wow.
Unless you live in New York City housing where they're now outlawing smoking, and it's pretty soon we'll have to go to Texas or something to smoke a cigarette.
Oh,
but not that that's a good idea. All right. What can I say?
Boy.
I mean,
let's
look into it. Tell you what, a little homework assignment for you, Layla. If there's a lull during our, next winter snowstorm, please look up that genetic modification. Let's sit down and discuss it in the office, as we often do, issues that that are new. And if it's worth testing for, we'll put it on our testing menu. It may be something that we will investigate in the future. It may actually be already incorporated in our pathway genomics panel. We'll have to check.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Best of luck to Linda, and we will broach that topic again. Okay. Let's see here. We've got an email from Bledi in Albania.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bledi has mitral valve prolapse.
Okay.
She had an echocardiogram. The doctor says she's in good condition. I can exercise without problems. What do you think? Can I go exercise? And she literally sent us the results to her echo, which obviously we're not going to discuss.
Right.
Here.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It was like a very detailed, oh, my goodness gracious, yeah. With all kinds of measurements and, oh, my goodness, it's very technical. Okay, so I have to say that...
Mitral valve prolapse, yes, she should be able to exercise. I'm assuming Bledi is a girl's name. I could be wrong. But her doctor says she's in good condition.
Mm-hmm.
And mitral valve prolapse is less of a condition and more of a phenomenon, I suppose.
Right, exactly.
So if she's taking a good multi and some magnesium, some fish oil, ubiquinol, I think those are great supplements for MVP.
Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the most popular writings that I've undertaken is a little booklet that I wrote years ago about mitral valve prolapse. It's achieved international recognition. I'm getting email from all kinds of, Kazakhstan and Mali and remote parts of the world. People have found it and they've read it, and they love the book because it really explains the weird phenomena that they sometimes experience when they have mitral valve prolapse. Many patients with mitral valve prolapse have phantom chest sensations, palpitations. They're more prone to nervousness, anxiety, panic attacks. They're very sensitive individuals. They react badly or strongly to medications, and therefore it's not just a heart issue, it's an issue with the whole autonomic nervous system, and it puts you into a sort of mercurial state. By that I mean your body's kind of a weather vane for whatever pushes it around, and it's reassuring for people to understand that they're part of a large number of people. It's a variant that's very common. It doesn't usually portend the need for heart treatment or surgery, unless it's a very extreme case, and can be monitored. Once you get an echo, you can get echoes every 5 years or 10 years, or if you have shortness of breath, you can see if the mitral valve prolapse got worse, if you need a valve replacement. But actually, exercise is one of the proper things to do. You actually want to condition your heart. And the worst aspect of having mitral valve prolapse is precisely what Bledi seems to be referring to, is once you have been told that you have a heart issue, you sometimes become what's called a cardiac cripple. You start thinking about your heart and, it's like, oh my goodness, maybe I shouldn't exercise. Maybe I'll conk out. I've got a heart problem. It's dangerous. Well, the vast majority of patients with mitral valve prolapse, they should condition their heart.
Yeah,
they should bring up their pulse rate and then learn to relax and bring it down with breathing techniques and meditation so that they can regulate their autonomic nervous system rather than being pushed around by phantom chest sensations and irregularities in their heart rate that drive them crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, any of those symptoms can also be helped with magnesium, fish oil, ubiquinol.
Yeah.
Those are also very helpful for MDP.
There's a whole list of suggestions in my book, and I recommend it highly. And it's not translated in Albanian that I know of. And if it is, I'm mad because I'm not getting any royalties from the huge Albanian market. There's all of about, 11 million people there. And so.
Thank you for your question, Bledy. Go to the gym. Go exercise, please.
Yeah. Go play some, what are they playing? Go play some soccer.
Soccer.
I think soccer is the big thing.
That's a good all-around European sport, yes.
Exactly.
Okay. Do we have time for another question?
Oh, indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. This one is from Franklin. What do you think of prolotherapy for knee arthritis? It's supposed to work well. It's supposed to strengthen ligaments. Thank you for pointing out the hazards of anticholinergic drugs and over-the-counter meds.
Oh, wait, let me just mention there's a postscript to that. Anyone who takes an antihistamine frequently is at higher risk for Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Now,
An antihistamine.
Now, this just came out. Antihistamines have cholinergic effects. By cholinergic, it means it deprives the brain of acetylcholine, which is essential for cognition and thinking. And over time, this can push you over the edge towards dementia. And if you have Alzheimer's, these things, you definitely don't want to take antihistamines. Now, a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't take an antihistamine. You know, many people take them for hay fever or congestion. We had a gal who came in the other day, actually, she was a physician, and she said, oh, I take an antihistamine every day because I have hives if I don't. And I said, well, maybe that's not such a good idea. And at that time, I wasn't even cognizant of this article. There are actually a lot of people who take antihistamines not for allergies.
To go to sleep. I hear people taking a Benadryl every night to go to sleep.
Most of the common, you know, like these PM drugs, like Excedrin PM, they contain antihistamines. And, you know, these very, like, over-the-counter, non-prescription sleep medication, they all rely on antihistamines to sort of knock you out a little bit. They rely on the sedating properties of antihistamines. And, you know, if your brain is totally intact and you're young and you're healthy, yeah, it won't make much difference. But if you're older, and especially if you are already moving a little bit into some cognitive decline or dementia, it could push you over the edge. And so this is very important. So anyway, I'm sorry, that's an aside. I know that person wasn't asking that question, but it was important to bring that up. So go ahead.
No, that's important information. So what do you think of prolotherapy?
So I think it is good. I think that any procedure that you do on a joint that hurts is very tied up with the placebo effect. You know, you pay your money and you undergo the treatment and you see the needle go in and you get, you know, it's kind of, you show up for a series of treatments. There's a high degree of placebo associated with any such process. There have been studies, however, that show that dummy injections of the, you know, just saline or water into the joint as compared to injections with the right kind of prolotherapy materials, which are high concentrations of dextrose and other ligament tightening medications, have an advantage over placebo.
Isn't calcium injected during
I'm not sure. Maybe. You know, okay. I think, you know, there are other type pitcher plant extract sometimes, high-dose dextrose, which actually creates a little bit of fibrosis. And that may tighten the ligaments. And in expert hands, I think that therapy can be good. You know, certainly if you're faced with the need for a more extreme procedure, surgery, you may want to undertake a series of prolotherapy treatments, which usually requires 8 to 12 to see if you're going to be helped. I haven't had it. I've had patients and colleagues who've, you know, they've gone either way. Some say it ultimately didn't do anything. It seemed to help for a while, but then it ultimately didn't. And then others who say that it was beneficial.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Franklin, for your question. Okay. Let's see here. We have
time for one short question. Yep.
Okay. This is from John.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, Doc, what are your thoughts on adding MCT oil to recipes and beverages? Many thanks.
Okay.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, let's talk about MCT. What is MCT?
Yeah, MCT oil, medium-chain triglycerides, such as coconut oil, among some other oils, is very beneficial use for energy. It does not adversely impact cholesterol.
They sell it separate. They have purified medium-chain triglycerides in bottles. They sell that separately, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To add to recipes and beverages could be a very good idea. It's a very stable fat. It can also help to put your metabolism into ketosis, lipolysis ketosis.
Right.
Because these medium-chain triglycerides demand to be metabolized first, so that fat is being metabolized immediately, upon digestion.
Possibly so, as part of a treatment for dementia, so that the brain uses fat instead of sugar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There have been clinical trials on MCT oils for dementia. I think a recent product is called Anova.
Okay.
For instance, and I think Dr. Mary Newport, who was trying to get her husband in at the time, this was several years ago, into a clinical trial for Alzheimer's, he wasn't able to get in because he didn't meet certain parameters or whatever. And then she went on to find out, what is the actual ingredient or therapy that they're using? She found out it was coconut oil. She went to the grocery store.
Right.
And put him on coconut oil therapy, and the rest is history. He's progressively been getting better. And you could read more about her story on coconutketones.com.
Great. I got to make sure I get her on the program. That reminds me of it.
Yeah.
I need to reach out to her and have a podcast discussion with her about the benefits of coconut oil and ketosis for cognitive decline. So, yeah, and the other thing about MCT oil is that, that's a lot of fat, a lot of calories. Interesting, it sort of has a homeostatic effect. In patients who are underweight and have a lot of difficulty absorbing fats and putting on weight, it may be an adjunct to putting on healthy weight. But conversely, patients who are overweight who take MCT oil, the satiety effect outweighs the caloric impact on their fat. So it can actually be used as part of a program to lose weight, interestingly.
Yeah, and coconut oil is beneficial in other ways. Lauric acid converts to monolaurin. It's a potent antiviral. It's very cooling to the GI tract for those
anti-inflammatory bowel
conditions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. MCT oil is good, particularly coconut oil.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. So that's about all the time we have for today's questions. A reminder, you can send us questions. Just keep on sending them to radioprogram@AOL.com. Please be patient because we have a backlog of questions. If you don't hear your question answered immediately, it may be because it will take a few weeks to cycle through. And
we love your questions, so keep sending them.
Yes, but particularly from far-flung outposts of the world, like Albania. We love it when we have... we have listeners all over the world. Thanks very much for joining us today, Layla.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in the office. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.